Hello, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy. I'm your host, Johan Brown, coming to you live from Chicago, Illinois, on the second Saturday of each month. Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy is an interactive live internet talk radio show that focuses on how to take advantage of the opportunities that life sends your way. The program explores obstacles overcome by ordinary people with extraordinary results and what inspires or motivates them to take positive actions that make their dreams a reality. I know a little about that myself, as I have had 10 careers so far. I started as a fashion model, then I was a rock and roll singer, a corporate consultant, an adjunct professor, and today I'm a professional speaker, author, coach, blogger, and radio show host. Let's set the tone for today's program. Fear, as Michael Pritchard says, is a little dark room where negatives are developed. We have a fantastic show for you today. Our topic is how to bypass the common victim mentality of the day. And our guest is Lee Trevithan. She is an A-list mentor of nearly 30 years, to artistic souls worldwide in the area of extraordinary thinking, a top-ranked filmmaker, a professional photographer, and an author. She has several books in publication and has authored over 500 articles today. She also owns a global radio network and a Phoenix Barter Exchange. Let me share a little more of her background with you. Lee is the top mentor to entertainment artists worldwide. She specializes in a mental reorganization method known as extraordinary thinking, which she developed in 1985. In her long career in the film, music, and book industry, she has successfully used her methods to help others as a popular television and radio talk show host and producer in Washington State, California, and Arizona, and is currently the owner of Lee Trevithan On Air Radio Global Network, Extraordinary Living Limited, and LT Media. She is also a top-ranked filmmaker, noted fine art photographer, inspirational product designer, public speaker, and celebrity blogger. She's the author of the popular Rebel Writer book series and is the author of the Rebel Writer Book of Blogs. She is featured in Walking with the Wise for Overcoming Obstacles, Keith Leon's best-selling book, Who Do You Think You Are?, and his telesummit, If I Can, You Can, as well as Susanna Abbott's From Failure to Fairness telesummit. Known as one of the greatest minds of our time, Lee remains in service to the world and has no plans for retirement. Her passion is teaching people to be positive rebels, bypassing the common victim mentality of our current social standards. Welcome, Lee.
Hello. How are you doing today? I'm glad to be with you.
I'm really glad you're here. I'm just wondering, what is the basic philosophy behind this common victim mentality? What does one need to do to rise above it, and how does one find the ongoing support?
Well, your support team is where you have to actually start, believe it or not. You kind of start at the end and go back to the beginning. One of the biggest difficulties with ordinary thinking in our world today is that it's perpetuated amongst families, friends, your entire social network, teachers, even ministers. It's all through the media. And it's that victim mentality. It's sort of the idea of, you know, when you wake up in the morning, are you going to wake up saying, oh, what's going to go wrong today? Or are you going to wake up and say, wow, what a great day. I get to do it again. How cool. And really, your support system is going to make a really big impact on how you wake up every morning. It would be nice to believe, Yvonne, that, you know, we really are so self-sufficient that we don't need anybody. But we're all kind of wired the same way, and at an unconscious level, if we don't have the right support team around us, to keep us shining, to keep us up, to keep us strong, to keep us confident, to keep us focused and centered, we sort of run a risk that we could sort of mentally fall down, you know, at any point and have a little trouble getting back up, because we have been spoon-fed this whole philosophy of ordinary thinking, you know, from the time we were born. If you watch the 6 o'clock news, you know, right there it is. You hear about it, you know, this person was a victim of this and this person was a victim of that, and it's just ongoing. So I gave up reading the newspaper and watching the news a long time ago.
Me too, as a matter of fact. What exactly is the victim mentality? Because I noticed that in your book you said that it's all about getting to the place where you understand that you're always better than what you tend to allow in yourself, and that it's good to reach higher because the higher you reach, the better life gets. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. It's one of my favorite subjects, actually. I guess I want to preface it by saying that when I say, you know, to bypass the victim mentality of the day or even to give it up, I'm not saying that there aren't victims in the world. Obviously, if someone is murdered or they have a car crash or something, we could consider them a victim of an event. However, what I'm talking about is the actual mentality beyond that. We get to decide how we're going to sort of mold and shape an event in our own minds. So we can choose to be happy even at a moment when things look bleak. It can be a conscious mental choice, a conscious thought position that we can take. And that allows us that no matter what is happening out there, we have a sense of security, we have a sense of inner power, we have a sense of inner strength. And we can remember that we really never are alone at any point in time. We always have a support system around us, you know, that is strong and viable and passionate and, you know, supportive. So I think it's important that, you know, we say, for instance, you know, there are quote-unquote victims in the world. There are people who, you know, bad things happen to them. You know, the saying bad things happen to good people. But at the same time, I think it's important to remember that what we do with our time is important, but what we do with our mind is critical to the outcome that we live, to the picture that gets presented, you know, out in the world beyond us. So say, for instance, someone has a family member or maybe they themselves have been involved in a car accident. You have two choices about that, basically. You can look at that and say, oh, this is horrible, this is terrible, it's the saddest thing in the world, and oh, this person was hurt or killed or, you know, whatever happened, and oh, it's just so horrible. Well, you can choose that, and that's ordinary thinking, and that's what we see as our social common. You can also look at it another way and say, everything happens for a reason. This happened for a reason. And yes, it's sad, but it's not the end of the world. It's the beginning of something new. It's the beginning of a new lesson. So I guess what I'm saying, Yvonne, is that if we look at life as sort of our classroom, in reality, you know, really truthfully say that to ourselves and really mean it, everything that happens to us then obviously is a lesson, but the question is, do we get the lesson or do we not get the lesson? And I know for me, for a very long time in my life, actually until I left home, 15, I kind of ran away from home and never went back. But I grew up, you know, around people that wrung their hands and, you know, scrunched their brow and every day, you know, just basically literally prayed that nothing bad would happen to them that day. And so what happened to me was everything that could happen that would be really bad for me happened, because the fear that I had around that happening created me having a victim mentality. And so I drew to me lots and lots and lots of really bad, really awful, terrible things. And people say to me today that know me, and some of them know me, you know, 40 years plus, and they say, oh, I just don't know how you turned out this well, or I just don't know how you got through that, or, you know, that would have just killed me. And, you know, speaking of some event in my life that they're aware of, and it just makes me scratch my head. I almost don't know what they're talking about. It's like, well, it's just a thing that happened. I didn't have to make it good or bad or, you know, anything like that. It's just something that happened. I just had to ask myself, well, what do I do about it? How do I stay up? How do I stay happy in the middle of pain? And I think the common victim mentality of our day tells us that if you are in pain, you have to choose one or the other. You can't have pain and happiness at the same time. And I just say that that's not correct.
How would you have pain and joy at the same time? How is that possible?
Well, my solution is real simple. Just be grateful for whatever is happening to you all day long, no matter what it looks like. And that will give you a sense of joy, even in the midst of pain. If we look at pain as a lesson, we can be grateful for the lesson. I know for me, some of my, you know, what people would consider your hardest lessons in life, and I'm sure you've heard this before, you know, those were my most powerful, most transformative lessons of all. In fact, I'm real clear that I wouldn't be who I am today and I wouldn't be where I am today if I hadn't had those lessons. So I am very, even those situations were very, very tough, very hard. You know, I am extremely grateful for them. I do have a lot of joy about them. I remember the pain, but I know that the joy was stronger than the pain. So I did actually experience both at the same time. So there's sort of a thankfulness that makes the pain not so bad. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. In fact, I have a little quotation on my desktop that pops up every day, and I have it memorized, and that's what I use in those moments. And it goes like this: every situation is a positive situation when viewed as an opportunity for growth and self-mastery. I believe in the perfect outcome to every situation in my life. And so when the situation occurs, because I see that every day and that's kind of part of my morning, I remember that and I think, okay, I can either stay on the problem side and be miserable, or I can go over on the solution side and say, what can I learn from this? How can I grow from this? And to me, having that little talisman, if you will, brings the opportunity to move over and attract more solutions to myself rather than more problems, as you were alluding to a few minutes ago. If that's where you are, then that's more of what you will get.
Exactly. Exactly. I have a memory of a situation that happened to me years ago. At the time, I had a wellness center in Scottsdale, Arizona, and it was really a great healing place, seriously a healing place. And a woman that was a professor at ASU, the Arizona State University here, invited me to lunch with her. And before lunch, we had a long conversation on the telephone. And as we met, we needed to wait for a table, so we were talking then. And I noticed that there was just a kind of a, I want to say a darkness to her that I couldn't really explain. And when I asked her, you know, what goes on in your life that you seem to be down, you know, so down, what is that? And she said, well, nothing ever works right for me. And she did.
Ooh, a declaration.
Yeah, that's a good one, huh? Nothing ever works.
Yeah.
Boy, we talk about putting a message out into the universe.
And, absolutely.
Yeah, and we sat down to have our lunch, and the waiter came to the table and, you know, got our drink order, and we were sitting there having our iced tea and looking at the menu, and she was talking, and we decided what we wanted, and I kind of hailed the waiter back over because I knew she was on a, you know, tight time frame, and I said, well, we're ready to order now, and he was just, oh, okay, well, what would you like? And he was just so sweet to me, and then when he looked at her, it's like he attempted to approach her in the same way, but something happened in his psyche where he just kind of literally physically backed away and said, how may I help you, ma'am? And she put in her order and he left the table, and she said, why did he act that way to you and so different to me? I said, you know, I don't really know. I mean, I did know, but I didn't know her well enough to be so vocal. So I said, you know, I really don't know. We'll have to figure that one out. And we had our food, and you know, she just complained about this and complained about that and complained about this and on and on, and just told me the whole story of how really terrible her life is and how unhappy she was with everything in her life, relationships, work, just life in general. And the fellow came back to take our dishes away, and he was so friendly to me, just like, well, here, let me take that for you. And he didn't even speak to her. He just took this. He didn't even look at her, didn't speak to her. And so he left, and she looked at me, and she said, I don't understand what's going on here. And I said, oh, you know, I got to be honest with you, I do. I said, you know, I see it this way. You know, you're living out the reality of ordinary thinking, so you're getting very ordinary results right now. You're getting the victim result. You're drawing it to you. Mm-hmm. And I'm having a very extraordinary experience. I'm very grateful for this day. The weather is absolutely beautiful. It's the middle of winter, and here we are with just light sweaters on, and the sun is shining, and life is beautiful. And well, when the bill came, he had not charged me for my meal, but he had charged her. So I thought, well, this is some kind of an interesting thing that I'll have to find out about. And I hailed him back over, and I said, I noticed you didn't charge me. And he says, no, you just made my day. You're just smiling and happy, and you just made my day, so I'm not going to charge you. It'll be on me today. Just thanks, because, you know, like, we get a lot of people in here, and especially at lunchtime, you know, people are busy, they're rushing, they're stressed, and people can be really mean to waiters. And he said, and you're just so nice. I just feel like treating you. And he did.
Wow.
And so as we were walking out, Yvonne, she said to me, I still don't get what happened in there. I said, you know what, until you really do get what happened in there and you point that finger inward and not out, like he's a bad guy because he billed me and not her and he wasn't nice to me and he was nice to her, until you get past that victim thing, you know, you're not going to figure it out. And I said, you know, it's a typical situation, though. That's a typical thing to have happen. In, you know, various formats. I mean, the story changes a little, but the actions are about the same. You know, the idea is about the same. Characters change, but still kind of the same story. And I guess I sort of don't stand against victim mentality, but I stand for the opposite.
Of course,
and that's a good
do.
Reason.
Of course you do. And I'm sure that's why you develop that thinking. So what drove you to develop and adopt extraordinary thinking and take on a Renaissance lifestyle? Because I'm sure you noticed in when I advertised this show, I said, she's a Renaissance woman, you know, and I love that. What drove you to develop and adopt extraordinary thinking and take on this Renaissance lifestyle?
Well, you know how they say that you heal yourself first and then you try to help others? And, you know, that's really true. I really came from a situation where I really could have been the ultimate victim. Like I said earlier, everything that could go wrong in my life, it went wrong. I mean, really wrong, like really bad. And it's so painful that, you know, I can talk about it today, but I had years there I couldn't speak of it all. I realized that when I was really young, I had a tendency to see people in cages, and they were sort of prisons of their own making. And I just, even as a little kid, I just felt like I just wanted to find the key. I wanted to get that cage open. I wanted that door open. I wanted people to be free to fly from all the things that they were putting their, you know, on themselves, self-imposed prisons, I guess you'd say. And I didn't understand why I felt that way, but I felt that way very strongly. I come from a long line of mentors. So I went to my dad, who was a preacher, had five churches, was a professional mentor and speaker. And I said, you know, this is what I'm feeling, and I don't know what that's about. And he said, well, if you figure it out, let me know, because that just sounds really, really strange. And it was about when I was 15 years old, my mother, I went to live with my mother. I didn't know her. I just sort of showed up at her doorstep kind of thing. And she was very curious about me because I was very different from her other children, and she had quite a few. And I just didn't fit the world, as she would say. And she said, you know, we're going to get we're going to get to the bottom of this. So like you, I started modeling. She put me into that arena, and I started doing, I tested out a lot of my grades at school. I really didn't have to actually go through the whole high school situation. And I started college on a Mensa scholarship, and we found out when I was age 15 that I had what's called a spattle brain. So I actually see everything in pictures. And that's why I was seeing this picture in my mind of people in cages. But I had to get to the bottom of that thing. I just had to figure that all out. Well, as you know, we draw to ourselves what we're going through, right? So who was in the cage?
Yeah.
Me. I was the person in the cage. So in my deep desire to heal from a lot of really tough family issues and, you know, a mother that didn't want me as a child and gave me away, and I was pushed around to this person, that person, whoever would just take me for a while, finally got back with my dad, and that did not work out well. My dad married someone who wasn't real stable, so it was really a very tough deal. Was living in sort of the backwoods of Missouri and just wanted to fly. And people were saying, you know, well, you know, you're just going to get out of high school and marry a farmer and live on the farm, and that's going to be your life. And the idea of it was just like, what? Really?
Exactly. And who decided that?
I'm not seeing that one. That's not the right picture for me. And, I decided when I was, in my teens, I was going to develop a format of thinking that got me out of that cage, that helped me find my wings, that helped me to fly above all of the very ordinary victim thinking of the day, because I was spoon-fed it as a kid. I mean, that was just really what life was like in my house. It was all about, well, you know, if something can go wrong, it will go wrong. And I really did believe it to the degree that it became very true. So as soon as I started shifting, then things started shifting around me. So as you know, life gets better, right?
Yes, it does. And so I'm wondering if that's what you mean in your book, that discernment is the key that opens the door to extraordinary thinking.
Yeah, you can't just take things in on autopilot and call it real. You actually need to investigate your own life. Find validation for the things you believe. Is it really true? Who says it's true? How do I know it's true? What evidence do I have? You know, sort of play detective. And when I started really doing that, I found out I had a whole lot of things in my brain that were absolutely not my stuff. They just weren't true for me at all. And yet, just on autopilot, I had accepted them. I didn't discern anything. I just thought, well, if so-and-so said it and they're older than me and they're more of an authority on life than me, well, then it must be true. Well, it just really wasn't true. Just simple things like, you know, hearing one of my family members to this day says the same thing. But as a kid growing up, I would hear, you know, if it weren't for bad luck, I had no luck at all. That's a pretty awesome thing to accept.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what you just described is what I call the programming that happens after you're born. Because when we arrive in the world, the programming begins immediately. You know, you enter the world and they say boy, girl, okay, not okay, okay, not okay. Then they take you home and they start programming you with their own beliefs, mindsets, personal history, autobiography of their own experiences that made them have the sort of belief. And so if you don't take that moment of discernment that you write of in your book, then you find that you swallow that whole thing, and that's part of the programming of who you are. And then you begin to attract that to yourself, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, so that you go, see, I told you, as that
that's
woman
right.
declared to you on the way to lunch. You know,
right.
Bad things happen to me, or nothing nice ever happens to me. How come it always happens to everybody else except me? And so every time you say that, it's coming from not necessarily your own autobiography, but more from the programming that you took in, accepted whole, without doing what you just mentioned, which is, oh, where's the proof?
Mm-hmm.
How? What is it that says this is the true reality? Which is, of course, part of extraordinary thinking, because today people don't do that. They just accept what's sent into them and live by that. So another question I have for you is, you've had a lot of different kinds of careers. Did they come to you, or did you specifically pick them out and say, I want that, and I want that, and I want that?
Each one of them has come to me, and it's sort of been like being at a banquet where I could see them all on the table at once. And at times we had to decide between one or another. Sometimes I could do lots more, and today I do them all at once. So it's kind of, yeah, it's a tricky life. As my husband says, he tells everyone, he says, you know, I'll never, ever divorce her. As long as I'm alive and there's breath in me, I'll never divorce her. I'll never separate. And people say, well, how do you know that? And he says, well, one, because I say so. So that's my reality. That's my truth. But he says, the other thing is, I just got to see what she's going to do next.
And you're successful in all of them.
So far, yeah. I intend to be, so I think that's a big part of it. I intend to be, and so it is. You know, it kind of, I have this agenda that I do twice a day where, of course, when I first wake up, I have about a half an hour where I'm doing absolutely nothing but gratitude work. Before I go to bed, I have about an hour where I'm journaling and literally writing a letter to what I believe created me and saying, you know, I'm so happy you did this for me today. I'm so happy you did that for me today. I'm happy that today you were with me, for me, through me, as me. I really appreciate that because I know that everything I do, I can't do by myself. I cannot do that on my own. It's sort of like, you know, people say, well, but you really could. And I say, yeah, you know, you could be right, maybe. But try to make a universe and see how far you get, or try to, like, manually make your heart beat. Take the responsibility of that. You know, make yourself wake up and go to sleep without any support from any other being or any other facility. Just make it all happen on your own. Well, you won't get very far. I don't think I could create a star, let alone a universe. I don't think I could get my heart to beat properly. If I managed to even master that, and, of course, mastery is a big part of extraordinary thinking. If I did master it, it's all I could do all day. You know, so I was raised with the idea that you pick one thing that you're going to do in your life. And aside from having children or, you know, having a home or whatever else your things are, you only do that one thing. Because, you know, the thing I heard growing up was when I would say, well, I want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this. I would hear, well, that's fine for other people, but not for us. We're simple country folks, so we don't do that. And, of course, you know, when I landed in Hollywood and I was in the middle of all the entertainment industry and I was going to all the A-list parties and doing all the stuff, I used to drive to these events, you know, when I was younger going, if they could see me now. Wow.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No.
Now that you... Seeing as how you mentioned Hollywood, let's talk a little bit about celebrity. You have some information about, from personal experience, being around or with or mentoring or coaching or helping celebrities. Would you like to share something you've learned with the audience from that perspective?
Sure. Well, I've had 30 years now. And I have to say, I don't know if I had to come back and do it again. You know, I don't know that I could do it a second time without following the same agenda because these are people who have rocked my world. They've inspired me. One of the things that I learned very early on that surprised me, of course, coming from the backwoods of Missouri and having family in Georgia and Tennessee and, you know, all over Alabama, et cetera. You know, I was always told that these people are different than us. They're somehow gifted or somehow unusual or, you know, somehow God has favored them and smiled on them. And that's why they get to do these unusual things called acting and writing, producing and directing, et cetera, and musicians, you know, doing film scores and different things like that. And I always thought that just didn't ring right in my head, just didn't seem right. And one of the very first lessons I ever had when I was very young, because I started all this very, very young, early 20s actually, I was divorced at 21, and I got thrown right in the middle of Hollywood right at that time and was just embraced, you know. One of the first A-listers that I met was, well, I won't say the name because I do have a privacy clause in everything that I do, or else they can't trust me to keep their secrets, so I don't have a job.
Of course, exactly.
But one of the first people was a real iconic, legendary actor, and he sort of took me under his wing, and he said, girl, you're going to go places. And I said, how do you know that? And he says, because you got something, some it, some factor, some deal, and it's unusual. And you make people happy, and you make people smile, and you just rock. And I said, oh, cool, all right. And I said, you know, you're very open. I'm kind of surprised that you're so open. And he says, well, you're going to find out that we really do put our pants on one leg at a time, just like everybody else. We really do. And the only difference between us and you is we have more problems than you do, and they're bigger. And we might have more money than you do. But that means we have more problems than you do, and they're bigger. So we have huge responsibilities that other people don't have to deal with. And over the last 30 years, I've had a philosophy about the people that I work with, and I get offers consistently still today to work with lots of different people. You know, I'll hear about somebody getting a DUI on television, and I'll get a phone call an hour later saying, hey, can you help me? I need to reconstruct my thinking. Like, no kidding. You know, and
yeah,
I'll either
exactly,
work with them
exactly.
or I won't. But I have this idea, and I actually say it to people who want to work with me. I say, you know, as long as you keep your bio and your briefcase hidden and you show me the real you, the true you, beyond Hollywood, beyond all the wrapping, the pretty package, then we've got a deal and I'll work with you. But you have to make a commitment to me that says, you're willing to go in with me like a bulldozer in your brain and clear out all the junk, all the road has to be cleared. And I mean, every pebble gets turned over and looked at. We're going to take a full inventory, and it's going to be painful at times, and it's going to be joyous at times. And when you come out of this thing, because they have to commit to a certain amount of time with me before I'll work with them. And so when you come out of this thing, you will be a different person. And we have to look at how that's going to affect your career. So I have a really strong agenda, and I'm one of those in-your-face mentors. I mean, if I get a call at 2 in the morning, from somebody somewhere in the world, and they're all over the place across the globe, and they say, you know, but I can't do it. I can't do it. It's like, well, you know what? Call me when you can. Because the fact that you're saying to me right now, I can't do this or I can't do that, or it's getting too hard, or I'm having to, you know, deal with stuff I haven't thought about in years and never wanted to think about again. Well, that's the best reason in the world to think about it. It's the best reason in the world to get yourself in the deep water and go swimming. You know, dive for the pearls, go for the good stuff. And when you start saying to yourself, I can do it, I am doing it, that's when we talk. And they'll get it. And, you know, probably about an hour later, I'll get a phone call and say, I can do it. I'm doing it. So let's talk about, you know, this and this and this. It happened to me, this and this. And of course, the big thing is, what's your story? And are you ready to get rid of it? Because you can create a new story.
Absolutely. And how much have you bought into one crafted by someone else?
When you take that inventory, when you take that inventory of yourself, it has to be really deep water. It has to be as honest as you can possibly be with yourself, and leave no stone unturned, hide nothing from yourself. And I think that's the biggest part of ordinary thinking that's kind of a turnoff to me, is it puts people in a position to hide even from themselves. So they're really kind of a stranger, you know, to themselves.
They lose themselves along the way.
They do. And sometimes when they actually see the real person that's there, and there's exercises I do to get them to that place, you know, I've had grown men just break down and start crying for days at a time, because one of the most prominent responses I've ever seen was a musician who looked in a mirror and said to me, I don't know that person. I don't know that person at all. And come to find out that he had been living with the person that wasn't real for 35 years. He never had been himself. He was always the entertainer. So, needless to say, his life is very different today.
That's, you know, the word celebrity, if you think about it, and you think of it from a different, if you flip it on its head and consider celebrity being celebrating yourself and your life, then you could be your own celebrity.
Exactly.
The real you, by celebrating who you really are.
Yeah, I like so many people in Hollywood, have sort of buttons about the red carpet and the whole entertainment industry, because I do believe we are all celebrities. I mean, let's face it, you know, we didn't get here by any accident. And, you know, as my catchphrase is, God don't make any junk. So, you know, there's nobody on this planet that is here by accident. That alone makes us a celebrity. We are here to celebrate. We are here to be celebrated. So I do believe we're all, you know, real high-grade people. We're the king of the species here, you know. We're the top notch. We're the top
who got
top
to
banana,
come and be,
you know,
in this physical form for a while. Exactly. I'm with you 100% on that.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, what differences from the life you lived before have you noticed personally over the past 30 years of living an extraordinary life as you are today?
You know, I don't have I don't have times of real sadness anymore. When I grew up, I remember one of my dad's dear friends saying to me, you know, that girl is real pretty, but she'd be a lot prettier if you could get her chin up off the floor. You know, and that said to me, yeah. I was actually walking around looking pretty depressed, I believe. you know, and I had heard all my life growing up that I was very gangly and awkward and ugly and a lot of things like that. And the truth was, is it was just the way I was being looked at. I do look unusual. I'm the first one to admit that. I don't make any bones about it. I will never be a Barbie doll as long as I live. And I don't look like most people. I have an unusual appearance. When I started modeling, thank goodness it made me a lot of money, because, you know, I had a more exotic look than the typical girl, so they hired me. But what I've noticed is that I had such sadness about that, because if you think about this, Yvonne, if you're told that and you believe that, you've got your whole life ahead of you. So what's your thinking going to be like if you're in a victim mode? You're going to think, oh my gosh, I got to do this all my life. I got to be ugly like this all my life. I might live, you know, my family people live 90, 100 years. You know, it's like, if I'm going to have to live that long like the rest of them and I've got to be ugly that whole time, oh my gosh, oh no, this is terrible.
Well, and, if that's the side you're on, yeah.
Yeah, so the biggest thing for me was, when there were, well, actually, there's two actually big things that were really prominent for me. One was, I realized I don't look like other people. I'm not going to look like other people. I never will. Oh, well. So beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So I'm not going to spit in God's face. I'm just going to say, okay, you made me, you knew what you were doing. You knew what you were thinking. You made me different for a reason. So, okay, here I am. This is me. This is how I am. And this is what I look like. And it's not so bad. In fact, I kind of like it. It's kind of cool. I kind of like not looking like everybody else, you know. So that was a big breakthrough. That was huge. And then the second one was, of course, realizing that I can do pretty much anything I set my mind to. Pretty much anything. And especially if I have the right support system, like we talked about in the beginning of this, you know. I really can make films. If I've never done it before, I'll figure it all out, or I'll get someone that knows how to do it and they'll help me. You know, my ex-husband and I wrote a lot of music together. He still performs it today. I married three rock stars. What was I thinking, right? You're the writer that needs peace and quiet. You know, it's like right now as we do this radio show, My husband's in the studio, right above me, you know, rocking out up there. You know, it's just one of those things where I didn't know how to do radio. Well, you know, then just do it. I didn't know how to be on TV.
Absolutely.
Well, I did it. I didn't know how to model. But I figured if I walk somebody, I'll get the walk down. Somebody else will dress me. They'll do my hair. I'll do my makeup. I'll just do it. I'll just do it. When it came to designing products, I'll just do it. When it came to, I do very elaborate decorating screens and schemes in homes, kind of changes the whole feeling of the house. You know, my idea is to make it like your sanctuary. Didn't know how to do that. Well, you just figure it out. You know, you see the picture in your mind, and you go, how do I get that picture to become real?
You make it sound so easy. You make it sound like all you have to do is just go, I'll just do it. But a lot of people are somehow they actually talk themselves out of it. Instead of saying, I'll just do it, they say, oh, I've never done it before. I don't know if I could do it. I better not do it. Or they allow others, family and friends, to talk them out of it. And so they never become their true self. They never reach the point where they can be their own celebrity of their own life, where they say, look at what I've accomplished. I just had this idea, and now it's real. How exciting.
Right. I think they get in their own way. Yeah. I agree with you. It's very prominent, isn't it?
I think it's part of the common victim mentality of living from the outside in instead of the other way around. Because the idea of, oh, I think I want to try that, that comes from inside you. And so you then have a choice of, if you're living from the inside out, you go, ooh, I think I could do that, and you go for it. But if you're living from the outside in, as soon as any little thing comes up in your way, you take all that negative energy and you take it into yourself, and it just squishes the light of that idea, and poof, it's gone. And you've convinced yourself otherwise. And I think
that's part of
what you need to do.
Right. Well, something I said earlier is a big part of it for me, and that is the idea that, you know, when I wake up in the morning, I look at the day ahead of me as truly a present. It is a gift. It is a present. You know, I didn't have to worry about waking up. My body naturally woke me up because that's how loved I am. And it's the same thing with anything else that I've been able to do in my life and be successful at. For me, that's the idea. Do me, for me, as me, through me. It's not all in my hands, and I think this is one of the keys in extraordinary thinking that turns that lock on that prison and gets you out and allows you to find your wings and fly, because you start to realize in extraordinary thinking that you're really not alone. You really don't have to do this all on your own, this whole life thing. You've got so much support. If there's something you want to do, if there's something you want to learn, you know, that thing, genius had, boldness has genius in it, you know, begin it. It's so true. But just remember that as you do it, you have an internal guidance system, and you can command it. You know, that's one of the things my dad used to say as a rebel minister. He says, everybody forgets, and, you know, he was really big into Bible quotations, which I don't know many, but he had a lot of them, and I remember some. And he used to say, people forget that in the Bible it says, command ye the works of my hand. Command me. You know, so when people say, well, how does God show up in your life? So he's kind of like the waiter at the table. He's going, can I take your order, please? You know, so order big. So know that. Oh, I remember you and I talked a little bit about the radio issues. And I remember the first time I ever went on air, it's like 2 minutes before I was going on, I looked at the producer in the studio and I said, I can't do it. And he said, you have no choice. We're going on in 59 seconds. We're going live. And
there you go.
This show's sponsored. It's paid for. You have to earn your money now. And I remember sitting in front of that microphone in this major studio and saying to myself, do me, for me, as me, through me. Just do this with me today. If I don't know what to say, you just put it in my mouth. If I don't know what to do, you just do it for me. And I think that, like I said, you know, one of the biggest changes for me is that I don't have times of sadness anymore. If something comes up that to other people is very sad, I kind of look at it like, oh, I see that that's sad, but isn't that interesting? What can I get out of this? What can I learn from this? What can I do about this? You know, and the main thing is I can stop looking at that person as a victim, because all I'm doing is sending them victim thoughts, which is only helping them to be a victim. You know, so becoming accountable is a big part of, it's a big part of extraordinary thinking is, you know, monitor your thoughts and make sure that what you're putting out there, even for other people, is what you really want them to receive. So don't say, oh, poor so-and-so, poor this person, poor that person, because you're really wishing poorness on them. You're really wishing a state of illness on them.
That's interesting. So maybe that's part of that mental reorganization method that you use with your extraordinary thinking methodology that will help people to turn around what they are thinking and feeling and even the words they use with others by having awareness of what they're sending in that person's direction or by their words, thoughts, and deeds, or attracting to themselves by their words, thoughts, and deeds. Because if you're not aware, if you don't have that mental reorganization, it just continues to perpetuate itself in that fashion, and it's your whole life.
Yeah.
And you never, until you get it and turn things around as you did in 1985 when you created it, until you get it, you don't get it.
Yeah.
You don't realize that you're actually bringing it onto your own self or creating that negative lifestyle or behavior or issue that you're faced with constantly.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting. To me, it's interesting that we do things like we maintain our cars. We maintain our cars because when we get in the car and we turn the key, we want the car to run. So we maintain our cars. We wash our clothes. We maintain our clothing because when we, you know, go out into the world, we want to look decent. We don't want to be all crumpled up and stinky and smelly. So we maintain our clothing. You know, if something has to go to the dry cleaner, we take it. We maintain our homes. You know, we clean our houses. We maintain our yards. We keep our yard work up. You know, if it's really important to us, we take care of our homes. If we want them to be our sanctuaries especially, we maintain our homes. We maintain all the little details of our life, like our computers. We maintain our pantry so that we have food in our pantry. So it just seems sort of strange to me that in ordinary thinking, the thing that is left out is that we don't maintain our own mind. We don't monitor our own mind and govern our own mind. We don't? What? You know, that's like having a child and then not taking care of it.
Absolutely.
You know, it's going to suffer. So I think you got to flip the switch, Yvonne.
I completely agree. And in fact, one of the things that I share often with people I coach and mentor and speak with is that your mind is like a garden. It's like a garden that if you don't maintain it, as you were just saying, then weeds, all kinds of negative weeds grow in it. And the weeds can overtake the whole thing. And so you have to, you know, you wouldn't let him to your actual real garden. You'd go out there and you'd pull the weeds. And sometimes it's so deeply rooted from maybe a word said or an emotion you got when you were a child that the root is really, really deep. Like some weeds, if you don't dig deep, it just grows back.
Sure.
Right back in the place you just pulled it out of. And you will do that to make sure your own garden is beautiful and has what you've wanted in it and plant what you want in it. But when it comes to our minds, like you were saying a minute ago, we just let any old thing happen there. We don't maintain it. We don't pull those weeds out or make sure we sprinkle seeds that say no weeds welcome here.
Exactly. We don't put up our signs.
And then what happens is that one day we realize that our life is this awful mess, that and we don't even know how it happened because we've been AWOL. You know, we've been not paying attention. And like your example, at very beginning, the top of the program where you said, you know, it's so much negative stuff is coming over the news and in the paper, I don't even read the paper anymore or listen to the news anymore. Just turn it off. I don't listen to it either. I do turn it off. And I actually say the words, I don't want those things entering my mind at all. And that's all about choice.
Yeah, and choice is
change your life and your mind.
You know, choice is one of the most powerful tools that we have in that maintenance. And I think it's very common in the world of ordinary thought to, you know, not realize how loved you are. And so you take all this for granted, this amazing experience called life gets taken for granted. And there's a cost to pay for that. You know, there really is, because you will have a lesser life than what you are allowed and a lesser life than what you deserve. When you go to sleep at the wheel of life, you are headed for a crash of unconsciousness. You know, you are. And I think it's just pretty interesting the way that our world is set up. It's really set up for failure. It really
is. I noticed that.
Yeah.
I noticed that. And actually, when we're very, very young, we are more joyful and open. And somehow, starting very early on, they say, no, stop that. And get into that programming mode. And a lot of people lose that ability to be joyous and creative. In fact, sometimes some people, I think, if they find themselves feeling joyous in a moment, they shut it down because it's an uncomfortable feeling. It's not normal for them.
True. Very
like
true.
Well, at lunch. She was there in a moment of joy, and rather than saying, "Ooh, I want that," she instead stayed in that negative place.
I asked her that day. I asked her that day, Yvonne. I said, "What would happen if you just burst out laughing? Just that real belly laugh kind of thing. What would happen?" And she said, "I think my face would break."
That's hysterical. That and quite true for many people, I am sure.
Yeah.
People would say, "Are you okay?" Because I never do things like throw my head back and laugh.
Yeah, when I first started this, there were people in my life that, of course, knew me, you know, and had known me for a long time. And it was quite hilarious to me because the rumor that was going around was, what's wrong with her? Something's happened to her. Is she on something? You know?
That's
and
exactly
people would even say to me, you know, you're just too happy. You're too bubbly. I don't like this. And I actually did lose most of my family members when I made the change. They just could not handle me at all. They actually think I'm kind of wacky. But, you know, I just look at it and go, well, you know, it's interesting. In all these past 30 to 40 years, my life has changed dramatically, but theirs has not. It's the same. You know, it's all the same. Very
Absolutely.
Predictable. Yeah.
And many people, that's what makes them comfortable. We have about 5 minutes remaining in the show, and I'd like you to tell us a little bit about your book.
Yes,
if you will.
Book
tell
is,
people where they can find it and a little bit about
sure.
it.
The book is called The Rebel Writer's Book of Blogs, and it is a great project that I did. That's how I like to put it. What is in the book is the most popular writings from the blogosphere that I had, that some of them are actually a couple of years old, but they're still heavily read on the Internet. have a large global readership that I really am very appreciative of and grateful for. So the Rebel Writers Book of Blogs are all those popular blogs that are inspirational, that are encouraging, that are transformative. The easiest way to go get it is just to go on the internet and put my name in, just Google my name, and all of my books will come up that way. If you have a bookstore near you that you frequent and they don't have it in, you can simply ask them to order it because they can get it. And people can also send a note to me at ltnews@cox.net. That's ltnews@cox.net. L is in light, T is in Tom, news, N-E-W-S, at cox.net. And I can actually send them over the links and everything that they would need, and they can subscribe to the newsletter there as well.
That's wonderful. Thank you very, very much, Lee, for the wonderful interview. And thanks to everyone for listening to the Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy show. Our next show is our holiday show. So we'll be speaking about a lot of joy, and we're going to be cooking up something very special for you. In the meantime, I want you to have a great Thanksgiving and make a list of things that you are grateful for, so that on that day, as you have your Thanksgiving feast, whatever it may be, you have it in the spirit of gratitude. I'm your host, Yvonne Brown, coming to you from Chicago, Illinois, and I'll see you next month on the second Saturday of the month at 2 p.m. Central Time. Until then, I'll leave you with these words by William Faulkner. Always dream and shoot higher than you know you can do. Don't bother just to be better than your contemporaries or your predecessors. Try to be better than yourself. Be sure to find yourself, live your dreams, and be happy. And remember to tune in next month. And in the meantime, visit me online at www.yvonnefbrown.com. That's Y-V-O-N-N-E-F, as in flower, brown, like the color, B-R-O-W-N, yvonnefbrown.com. And use the contact page to share what you would like to hear on the show. Lee, thanks again for being our guest. It's
oh, thank you so much.
Having you, and it's been an extraordinary interview.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. If you have a topic that you would like to learn more about, please send it to me at yvonne@yvonnefbrown.com. You may also use the contact page at www.yvonnefbrown.com, yvonnefbrown.com, to share your comments about today's program or to ask me a question. Until next time, this is Yvonne Brown saying, each day you have the opportunity to get out there on life's playing field or sit on the sidelines. It's always more rewarding to get in the game and play.